You're listening to The Comedy Cellar, live from the table on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Comedy Cellar Show here on Sirius XM, Channel 99. My name is Noam Dworman. I'm the owner of The Comedy Cellar and the host of your show. I'm here with Dan Natterman. We're at the back table of the Comedy Cellar. We have one of my favorite comedians, Mr. Gary Veeder.
Oh, thanks.
Is he? I've never heard you say that before.
Oh, absolutely.
Right now, he just said.
I took personal interest in Gary Veeder and getting him into the Comedy Cellar.
Oh, okay.
I saw him first. He was on the same show with Pete Davidson.
Yeah, at Caroline's.
Yeah. And I liked both of them, but Gary in particular. Pete was just young, and he had almost no material, but he was 18, 19?
Oh, yeah.
And he had a lot of star quality. But Gary's material struck me. Okay, and we're joined by Ryan Quesada, who is a 24-year-old Los Angeles-based singer-songwriter and transgender activist. And is transgender, correct? Correct, yeah. You might have put that in. Okay.
Well, that's sort of implied if you're a transgender activist. Generally speaking.
I can't be an activist for the NAACP?
You could be. It would be an unusual thing. Go ahead.
He's appeared on TV often to speak about being transgender. My apologies. He's also been the subject of a documentary titled Songs for Alexis, and starred in a movie titled Collective Unconscious that premiered on South by Southwest. That's the network, South by Southwest?
Oh, it's a film festival.
Boy, are you uncool.
You knew that?
It's South by Southwest. It's a festival every year in Texas.
It's awesome. Like the biggest one in the world.
They call it South By.
Take it easy, Ryan. Okay.
He's an old man. Give him a break.
And his latest full-length album is called Shine and is available on iTunes and Spotify. And he came to our attention because he wrote an article called... This is our producer, Steven, and he just does not make it easy.
Well, he's more of a guest booker than a producer.
What's the article's name? What's the article that you wrote?
I don't remember the name of the article because they changed it.
Well, the point of the article was, yeah, which was that, as opposed to many people who are very easily insulted these days across mm-hmm. all sorts of aspects, you don't get all bent out of shape if somebody uses the wrong pronoun or somebody has trouble remembering whatever it is, correct?
Yeah, it's like, why do I need to correct a stranger if they get the wrong pronouns, you know?
But let's establish that you were born a biological female.
Yeah.
And you identify as a male.
Yeah.
Okay, just so we're established. Because his voice is very feminine. And that's one of the reasons.
Stereotypically. Well,
and Ryan's mom is here. And I know this much, Ryan does not take testosterone shots because he doesn't want to change the quality of his singing voice.
Yeah.
So that's why he maintains the kind of a tenor.
Hey, whatever, you know that chick Charisse? She's a transgender female to male, right? You know Charisse?
No.
Charisse Parambanco or something like that? Filipino chick? She sang with Celine Dion? No, never mind then.
Okay, so now can I ask you a few questions about the transgender experience? Because it is fascinating, and it's something that I think people are interested in and afraid. They're literally afraid to ask. So
yeah,
at the earliest age, you always felt that you were of a different sex than what people told you. Is that right?
I always was like one of the boys, especially with my brothers and friends and everything. And my dad always called us his three sons as like a joke before I came out.
He was a friend of Fred McMurray.
No, he doesn't. You see?
I don't know.
He's too young for that. Yeah.
But as soon as I hit puberty is when I like realized, you know, that things were different because, you know, things were developing and stuff. So it's like sort of like obvious, you know, that this feels wrong. So, yeah.
It's just, you know, I think trying to describe the transgender experience to a non-transgender or cisgender, as they say, it's kind of like trying to tell a guy who's been blind from birth what the color red looks like. I mean, it would be almost impossible, I think, to really transmit exactly what it feels like. You say you felt like one of the boys. I can understand what that would mean. You like masculine things. You like to play with guns. You like to wrestle, you know, get in the mud, etc. The question is, but what is it like? So I can very easily understand what it's like to feel to like masculine shit. Mm-hmm. But the question then becomes is, well, why not just like masculine shit in a female body?
Because what it comes down to is being uncomfortable in my body. So, like, I was really depressed until I got my top surgery. So that was something, like, that I had to change about myself so that I would be able to walk through society.
What is top surgery?
Basically, it's, like,
can you guess? No,
reconstruction of the female chest.
You removed
your
breasts.
Flat, so it's flat, you know? Because before that, I was wearing a chest binder that made my chest flat, and that is very painful to do, so...
I think it's just very, very... I think we'll never really be able to understand what it's like to be comfortable in your body.
Well, I understand what that's like. But I actually took it as more... And then, I mean, I don't want to dwell on this, but I always took it as not so much wanting to do masculine things, but masculine identification in a sense like my son Manny wants to be... If he picks a superhero, he wants to be Batman. But I imagine you probably wanted to be Batman. Like, you didn't want to be Batgirl, right, when you're, like, playing games. You saw yourself more as the male superhero. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it doesn't really have much to do with, like, masculine and feminine as it has to do with, like, a sense of who you are and what your gender is and how you want to be referred to in life.
I think you can want
it. I'm way more empathetic than Dan is. I can feel other people. Dan can't. Dan
well,
no
you
idea.
Can't feel it because it's impossible. You can want to be Batman and still not mind having a female body. You know, there's very masculine women that are perfectly happy with a vagina and with breasts. But they like male shit. They identify with male things. I think they're
That's
two
my point.
Separate.
That's,
yeah, it's about being uncomfortable.
But to
in your
really
body.
Understand what it's like to look at your female body and say this ain't right, I would think is probably just plain impossible to understand if you're not. And probably the reason for which there is so much prejudice that still exists is because it's very hard to. Because it sounds like, you know, to somebody that has an experience, it sounds like, but just get over it. Just be a dude. And keep your breasts. But
I don't agree with anything Dan is saying, but go ahead.
I mean, it's hard to understand because you could also just be gay, too. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, so I don't, you know, to me, it's like there's an option, but it's just, that part is confusing.
Wait, so your sexual orientation is
straight.
That is to say, you identify as a man, but you, what are
you
sexually attracted
women?
To?
I mostly lean towards men, but sexuality and gender identity don't make each other one way, or else like if being trans meant that I automatically liked women and that's how like my gender determined my sex, then there would be no gay people on the planet. Like everyone would just like transition, you know? So like your gender identity has no.
I'm so confused.
I know exactly what he's saying.
He identifies as a male, but he likes women.
Yeah.
Is that or you identify as a male, but you like men?
Yeah.
I forgot.
Mostly, yeah.
You like men.
Yeah.
You identify as a man and you like men.
Yeah.
Oh, so that,
gotcha.
Makes, that makes you gay.
In a sense,
the other thing that fascinates me is that you seem to be very, very lucky, unless it's, you know, hasn't always been this way, that you have parents who were. Made it easy for you. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't always been
this
way, but it
is
now.
What was it like, Mom? Was it hard for you?
Well, at first it was a little confusing. I said, I believe what you're saying is true, but because I'm a woman who really enjoys being a woman, I can't really feel what you're feeling. I believe that it's true, but I just can't feel
what
you're feeling. Maybe 13 or 14.
Yeah, but even to come to your mother and say that at that age, I think requires a particular confidence in the relationship.
And I really didn't know any transgender people, so I didn't really understand much of anything at all. So I said, you know, maybe you should just put it on the back burner for now because there's really nothing you can do about it. And I was wrong because now Ryan is like one of the greatest activists that there are.
Well, good for him. Did you rack your brain and say, like, this, I'm going to say this, I don't mean this. In a bad way, but I can imagine the parents like, where do we go wrong? What do we do?
No, I never thought that because...
Did we cause this in some way?
I always thought... I knew as a small child, Ryan was not a straight, you know, cis person. I just knew that, just you know? Me. I just knew that.
You didn't
that.
Know. The word cis obviously was not
no,
in
I didn't
your
know
mind.
That. But I said, oh, this kid, yeah. My daughter's definitely a lesbian. And that's what I always thought, and it didn't really bother me at all. you know, what difference does that make?
Well, you couldn't have been more wrong because he likes dudes.
Right. Now look how confusing life has gotten.
Lesbians hate dudes.
Look how confusing life has gotten.
Well, Ryan, let me ask you this question. If you were forced because the technology just wasn't there to give you a more masculine form, forced to live in a feminine body, just how untenable would you be able to do that, or would it be almost impossible, if not impossible, psychologically?
I think it would be completely impossible. I think if I didn't get my top surgery as young as I did, that I would not be here.
What do you mean not be here?
Wait, you?
I was
we gotta
so
spell everything
suicidal.
Out for you.
You mean would kill yourself?
Yeah.
Wow.
It didn't mean not be here at the Olive Tree Cafe.
It has to be painful for a mother to hear. You know?
And is that like a common theme that you like talking to other transgender people, they feel the same exact way?
Yeah, I mean, across the board? Suicide rate is about 50%.
Oh, wow.
Attempt suicide, okay. So.
In your article, you said something that I thought was very, very, how old are you?
I'm 24 now.
Which I thought was very, very profound and maybe wise above, exceeding your years. You wrote that the only way to change is to educate people. You can correct the way. I'll read the two paragraphs. I have transgender friends that get so mad to the point they would yell at a waiter for calling them the wrong pronouns. I happen to believe that it's not the waiter's fault. It's something that has been taught by society, a social construct. It's not hateful. It's not hateful. It's just ignorant. The only way to change is to educate people. You can correct the waiter nicely, and maybe he won't be so quick to judge someone's gender upon meeting them. Or maybe next time he'll ask what someone would like to be called. Or you can educate in other ways. I like to go into high school or colleges and talk about being transgender. If they know we exist, they are less likely to assume strangers assume gender. I think that is so absolutely correct. And I think it doesn't just apply to transgender. It applies to so many social issues.
Including...
the stuff that went on in Charlottesville about taking down the Confederate flag. I had the same thought that because I know a lot of Southerners, you know, and they really, many of them don't believe the Confederate, they don't think they're racist, and they don't believe the Confederate flag means that they're racist, but they identify with it because it's been there their whole lives. Like, you know, what's the show?
Dukes of Hazzard.
Dukes of Hazzard, you know? So you
He's
go over there and
for
say,
the Dukes.
You need to take down that flag. And if you don't, you're a racist. And their first reaction is, fuck you, I'm not a racist. And if by taking down the flag means I have to admit to being a racist, I'm not taking down the fucking flag. Or you can come to them nicely, a la Ryan, and say, listen, I'm not saying you're racist. I get it, you've grown up around with it. But you have to understand how this, you know, I'm black, and how this was the flag of the people
who
enslaved us. And maybe you can see it from my point of view. And they say, oh, you know, okay, yeah, maybe I should take it down, you know, because I want to be nice. I'm not saying I'm not a racist, but you explain it to me nicely, and I think you get way more results that way.
Yeah.
In general,
your approach definitely matters.
And
back, Ryan has a Confederate flag tattoo
on her chest,
yeah, right.
On his chest, and then you can talk to people, and then things tend to work out a lot better. And did you always have that? Is that just your personality, your easygoing, or did you always have that attitude about things? I mean, I really think it's so important.
I've been out for a long time. Like, I've been out in the queer community for over 10 years, and I've seen this community change so much. When I first came out as transgender and I told someone, hey, I'm transgender, they would say, what the hell is that? Like, they had never heard of it before. And now I could, like, tell a complete stranger I'm trans, not even transgender, and they know what I'm talking about. So, like, things have changed so much. And, like, part of that is because people went out and educated, you know? Like, I spent my entire high school time educating my school so that when I left that school, I knew that that school would be a better place than when I was in it.
I was actually early to this. My grandmother, God bless my grandmother, I can remember when I was like 14 years old wanting me to read, was it Christine Jorgensen? Was that her name? His name? Her name?
Her name.
She went from male to female. Was she a tennis player or something?
No, that was...
You're thinking of Renee Richards.
Who was Christine Jorgensen?
She was the first trans woman to get surgery, I think.
Yeah, that was a movie, The Dutch Girl or something.
She did something. Anyway, but the point is
Danish lady? I don't remember.
I didn't read the book. But I just remember my grandmother trying to get me to read the book because my grandmother was so taken with this story.
Yeah.
And she felt, for whatever reason, I mean, this is someone who was born in, like, 1899. She felt very strongly about this issue and had enormous sympathy for this issue. This is in the early 70s. I and it always stayed with me. And then growing up in the village, I guess, and I was always pretty open to it. But I'm very happy to see that this is, and the country's turning around pretty quickly on this, right?
I would say so. People think we haven't gotten anywhere, but just like that little thing I just told you before about saying I'm transgender and people understand it now, like, that means that things have progressed a lot.
Well, I just read in the paper today, or the paper on the internet, and I don't actually agree with this, that Stamford, Connecticut has now stricken all pronouns from
its... Wait a minute, I'm from Stamford, Connecticut.
Yeah, they just struck...
I was just in Stamford, Connecticut.
They just struck all pronouns from their official documents or something. You can't say he or she anymore, which... You know, I mean, it's not life will go on without he or she.
My mother didn't mention that at lunch yesterday.
But it seems a bit much. I mean, you use he or she when you talk, right?
Yeah, or they.
No, but I'm saying, like, if you were talking about me, like, you went home and said you would describe me as he.
Yeah. Well, but if I didn't know someone's gender, I would just say they.
If you didn't know.
You're saying that in your mind, and I don't think I agree with this necessarily, but say I met somebody, and... I met Noam, and I just started saying I didn't know him, and I met him tonight, and I said, "Yeah, he owns the club." Mm-hmm. You would say that would be rude because I didn't ask him.
No.
No, are you saying, Ryan, that it would be rude for me in your mind to simply assume that Noam is a he?
Well, we know.
Well, we know, but say I just met him tonight, and I look at him, and they're believing there's nothing feminine about him, as you can see.
Well. not with my clothes on.
But say that I just, as I typically would do, I met him and he introduced himself as Noam, the owner of the club, or some gender ambiguous name like Robin, no owner of the club. And I said, oh yeah, that guy, he owns the club. So you were saying, and in your mind, that would be wrong to do that.
No, I mean, unless you called him he and he said, that's not my pronoun, I prefer they or she, then... It's not really wrong, I don't think. Like, I think if you can't really tell someone's gender, it's better to ask than
assume. Okay, so you're saying in an ambiguous case.
Yeah.
But if somebody's clearly a dude, like I would say Noam is clearly a dude.
What about Gary?
And a straight dude. Well, Gary's got a beard, so I would say yes.
I think it goes by your intentions. If your intentions are negative to go along with it, like if you're calling Noam a he, you know, when
just
you...
to be an asshole.
Yeah, exactly. Then it's a problem. And that goes with anything. You know?
So when typically people see you and they don't know you, they assume what?
They don't know.
They just don't know.
I get so, like, mixed responses of what I am. But even this, like, I'm, like, so afraid to use public bathrooms. So tonight I went in the women's room with my mom and nobody looked at me. But if also, the same clothes and everything, I bet you if I go to Penn Station right now and go in the men's room, no one's going to look at me either.
Where would you prefer to go?
I would prefer to go in the men's room, but I'd prefer not to get assaulted.
Right. Why do you prefer to go in the men's room?
Because I
prefer to go in the ladies' room.
Yeah.
Identify as a man, so I feel like I should be in that bathroom.
Of course, a lot of men would be happy to go into the ladies'
room. And also, the line's real much shorter.
Uh-huh. Wait, so, but you haven't had bottom surgery.
No.
You're going to use a stall
now,
either
no,
way.
No, I don't have to explain to you what bottom surgery is. You, I assume, from the context... would guess.
Yeah, I get it.
but that seems... Is that something that's in your future?
No.
You don't want to do that?
That is, like, such a painful surgery that people don't even, like, consider the pain sometimes before they get it.
Well,
and
what
are, like,
is it? Because, like, I can understand, you know, like, going the other way. You take the penis out,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I don't know what they do, but it seems like it would be easier than going toward the male side.
Okay. Can I just say something?
You don't want to have this discussion?
No, I don't know if we want to have it or not. I want to say something because I'm uncomfortable about one thing.
Oh, go ahead.
I don't want this to veer into some sort of, like, God forbid that he thinks that we're treating this as, like, an oddity and that we want to discuss that. Now, if you don't mind discussing it, whatever, you're interested, it's certainly normal human to be curious about these things.
Yeah.
That's not my main interest. And I'm much more interested in the psychology and almost the political aspects of where mm-hmm. you're coming from. So if you don't want to answer those questions,
mm-hmm.
don't answer them. If you don't mind answering them, I don't think that his intention is not bad, but I don't want you to feel...
Well, because if the notion is that you're very uncomfortable with your own physicality, one would think that would be an important thing.
Yeah, I mean, for some people it is life or death, same way the going on hormones is life or death. But for me, like, getting my top surgery was enough.
So just so that you have the physical exterior manifestations, mm-hmm. per se.
Yeah.
Of
I mean, eventually, like, I mean, I've been out so long that I just got to a point where, like, I realized that genitalia doesn't determine somebody's gender. So I don't even know, like, what I'm expecting, you know? So I don't, like, assume anything, really. So I don't assume things about myself anymore.
So it is
very complicated. Yeah. No,
it's fascinating. You know, it's also fascinating to me that throughout as long as human beings have roamed the planet, there have been people suffering with this psychology. You know, and they had to live with it. You know, and maybe they did kill themselves and have horrible things. You know, so I imagine, and this kind of would be an argument for people to be a little less angry. Is to think how fortunate you are to be living in America in 2008 or in the Western world, where you know you still may come across some hateful or mm-hmm. ridicule, whatever it is, but you can probably cocoon yourself into a pretty happy lifestyle now mm-hmm. among the people that you surround.
Depending on where
with.
You live,
yeah. And so that's new. That's mm-hmm. new to the world, right? Mm-hmm. So
well, you know, there is evidence of civilizations in the past, certain Native American civilizations that actually welcome transgender peoples, and mm-hmm. So I've heard. Yeah,
but
I read
you
that.
You gotta live in a teepee.
Well, yeah. Be that as it may, I don't know that it.
Come on, Dan.
In the length and breadth of human history, I think there have been other societies that were somewhat accepting of this, or so I read.
There definitely was.
Oh, you know, you hear about these things.
I doubt it. Anyway, there was a character in the movie Little Big Man with Dustin Hoffman, that molester, Dustin Hoffman. Yeah. By the way, do you have a take on the Me Too thing? This is interesting to me because you feel like a man, but I'm prejudiced in this sense. I feel like without that raging testosterone coursing through your veins and your neurons, that you probably don't really understand what it means to be a sex-crazed man.
Well, I don't think I'll ever understand what it means to be cis, you know? I'll never have that experience, so.
So can you identify with men in terms of, you know, the way they act sexually and... Do you have a take on? Do you sympathize more? Are you able to? That's the wrong sentence. But how do you feel about the Me Too thing?
Yeah. Well, I think that I don't necessarily think it's just men that are sexually assaulting. I think it's also women too. And for some reason, that's not being spoken about. But I've been in instances where women have taken advantage of me. And I think, like, everyone would think that's, like, stupid to talk about because, oh, a girl took advantage of a guy,
what does that
you know?
Mean? But,
well, I've been there myself.
So a girl, knowing your profile,
mm-hmm.
tried to get you into bed as a transgender man.
Yeah, or just, you know, it happens. Like, I think it happens, it even happens in people that married relationships, like, you know, people get mad if, like, their partner won't have sex with them or something for a couple days or whatever. But it's, like, I don't know. Like, I think that it's, like, a really sensitive issue right now. And I think that people are very, like, affected by sex. I think mainly because, like, it's so, like, it's seen as such, like, a taboo thing and, like, oh, we shouldn't have sex till marriage and we shouldn't be sexual beings. But, like, humans are sexual beings. But it's, like, not okay for someone to, like, do something without asking, you know? Especially, but, I mean, also, like, if I was in a situation where someone was treating me in a way and I could get out of that situation, then I would leave, you know? But if I can't get out of the situation, which has happened, like, then I don't think, like, you know, like, there's nothing that I could do, you know? So...
We got a lot of flack. What's your biggest audience on Instagram?
You might find that the response is fascinating. Give it a chance now.
My biggest audience currently is, it's like 65% female. And you would think that it would be a lot of trans men.
Why?
That is to say 65% cis female.
Yeah, I would think.
I heard the one song on YouTube, and I really, really like it. It's really, really happy and peppy, you know.
Did we mention he was a singer? Did we mention that earlier in the...
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Just to recap, he is a singer.
And very commercial on that. I can't wait to go home and play for my daughter, because I think she's going to love music. She loves music like that.
Mm-hmm.
And are you having good success with your music career?
Yeah, I mean, I've... I've been all over the world.
You play an instrument too?
I play guitar, piano, and harmonica.
I play guitar and piano, not harmonica.
Cool.
I thought you were gonna we're gonna play together or something.
Well, if you have a guitar,
nobody brought a guitar. Well, you're the one with the guitar. You're the producer. I don't carry my guitar around. All right.
You can go upstairs. There's a guitar.
No, it's too late. So
there's a guitar upstairs.
So I got some criticism on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
From somebody, you know, we talk a lot about the Me Too things with Louie and all that stuff. And I've been pretty vocal about, and by the way, the world is coming around about feeling that procedurally that men are getting taken down left or right without any kind of consistency and without any right, no way to defend themselves. And it just, it made me very, very uncomfortable. And somebody on the phone, somebody I respect, said that we ought to have a guest on who from the feminist point of view or from a woman's point of view explaining. Where did Steven go?
He's getting a guitar.
I told him not to. All right. Explaining so that we could show that we are actually sympathetic to women on this show and the position that women are in. And
that's why I'm here.
Yeah, that's why Gary's here. Steven, we're not getting the guitar. Forget about the guitar. You didn't get us a woman to talk about the Me Too thing like we asked.
It wouldn't come on.
You couldn't find a single woman. Jeez. This is the hottest issue in the country. And you couldn't find one woman who could come on and take the Me Too side.
They didn't really. They didn't want to go.
Who's they?
The people that I asked.
Yeah.
Well, we got plenty of other stuff to talk
about. So we really want to have somebody in the future. Because we are extremely sympathetic to women being... you want to say something, Steven?
Well, we have someone booked for like a few weeks from now, but we just couldn't get him on short notice. Yeah, no, you're
right. All right. So you're leaving me hanging here. In any event, so I was kind of hoping that you could say something about it to cover me. But I don't know, Gary, what's your take on the Me Too thing?
I mean, as far as, basically like lynch mobs going after people, I think that people kind of jump on, the bandwagon. It's like a lot of, some cases obviously are legitimate, but then there are cases that, where, I mean, I'm not in any of those situations, so you can't say what happens behind closed doors, but a lot of the times where it seems like, a situation with, like, a Ben Affleck, where he's accused of grabbing someone's ass, like, 10 years ago, to me, that doesn't seem, like, that serious. Meanwhile, he was a guy who initially was trying to, like, stand up to it and be against people, like, for, say, like, Harvey Weinstein or whatnot, but he's going, somebody makes a comment, then they immediately like try and dig up dirt on that person and then go after him. And, it's easy to attack somebody who's famous because you could have a million people respond on Twitter and those people just, keep on responding. And it's easy to, if everyone's saying negative things, to just jump on that bandwagon.
Well, look, you have like three categories. The first category is, and I'm very, very intolerant of this, and I've always been, where somebody is in a power position such that any little request is difficult for them to turn down. Like I had years ago, I don't know if I mentioned this on the air, but I think it just occurred to me recently. I used to have a no back rub policy in my staff because I'd see like the male waiters like giving back rubs to the female waiters.
Yeah.
And I always felt that this is something wrong with this, that there's a little leverage here in the workplace where they don't want to make waves. It's like, don't fucking touch anybody. Not, when you get off work, do what you want. I don't want to see anybody touching each other. I always tell my door guys.
And when they get off work, touch each other. They do.
I don't want my door guys putting their hands on any, just like everybody, right. Keep their hands up. I didn't like the kiss goodbye. I was always very careful about complimenting a waitress or anything. And I married a waitress. It wasn't like I was hands off, but I was always very aware. So, and that's the classic sexual harassment, where somebody doesn't want to resist even something which isn't like getting like a back rub. Because they don't want to suffer any consequences at work.
Right.
And I'm actually very, very, very extremely sympathetic to that. But to eradicate that, you're going to need, first of all, bosses to have policies like I'm talking about. And at some point, you're also going to need to have women, it's usually women, coming forward and not being afraid to say that they feel this is inappropriate or that they're feeling pressure. And it's hard to get them to do that. And that's really, I predict that will be the bottleneck 5 years from now. It's just they haven't figured out how to get women to put away the embarrassment and be willing to come forward. And I don't think it's because they're worried about retribution, although that might be sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think there's something deep within people. They just don't want to tattletale. They just don't want to come forward. So that's one aspect. The other aspect is the clear criminal behavior, like Harvey Weinstein, where people are doing something which, if you could catch them, they'd be doing time.
Right.
And then you have, and this is why I'm going to say, then you have the Louis category, which they tried to shape it as that he was in a power position, but I think that we know he wasn't in a power position back in 2003 or whatever. He was just like the hotel room. He's hanging out with some other comics. They're hanging out all night. They're drinking and smoking pot. They go up to a hotel room. You're in a hotel room at 2 in the morning with a dude. You know, what a shock. He's looking to, you know, do something sexual. And he crosses a line of some kind of appropriate behavior. And appropriate is defined by what you can get away with. Like, you know, if they had been into it, nobody would have said anything he asked was inappropriate, but they weren't into it, so it's inappropriate. And I'll agree that it's inappropriate. But that, to me, is the weakest scenario for taking somebody down publicly. He wasn't using his power. He wasn't trying to force him into anything. He wasn't committing a crime or doing something like that. He was just a dude who crossed over a line. Now, maybe it's because he's drunk or he's high or because he felt he got signals, or maybe that's just, you know, that's just his uncontrollable urge. But it doesn't seem morally comparable, even to the lesser thing of the guy, of the manager giving the waitress a back row where she has the heebie-jeebies because she can't stop him. She's right. Got to fucking put up with the back row because it's her manager, you know? I don't know, that's my take on it, but it's clearly misunderstood a lot of the time. What do you think about it?
I don't know. I feel like if I was in the situation with Louis C.K., I'd be like, hey, I'm just going to go back to my hotel and sleep right now. I'm really tired, you know, and I would get out of the situation if I didn't like it. But, like, I don't know. I used to live in San Francisco, and I'll be honest, like, I would go to the Castro Theater, go see a movie. Do you know how many gay men would touch my butt? And, like, honestly, I don't care. Like, it didn't bother me, you know? Like, they were attractive. Like, I don't care, you know? But, like, if someone did that and I said, do not do that, and they did it again, like, I would be like, that is messed up, you know? Like, you should, like, you know, like, that is not cool, you know?
But what's the Castro Theater?
Oh, the Castro is, like, the gayest neighborhood in San Francisco.
And these movies are gay content movies?
No,
it's just
not
a regular
even,
movie.
No, just any movie. Family movies, E.T., whatever.
And I was like, the Magic Johnson Theater is not all black movies.
I'm just asking.
No, it's just, like, a very famous theater. It shows every, like, any type of movie, any classic movie that people would love to see, you know, it would be there.
I'll tell you what I was thinking. Like, I imagine, like, if it's a sexually charged thing.
No, it's not a sexual
thing,
theater.
A touch on the butt would
I would
be
not
more common
be
than
there.
In a, going to see Star Wars, you know?
No, but I don't know. It's just, like, San Francisco culture, you know? But, like, if it was, like, I've never been in a situation where, like, my boss has, like, touched me inappropriately, you know, so I don't know how it would feel, but I think I would feel, you know, bad about it and like, oh my God, I'm going to get fired, you know, so I can't say anything. So there becomes that thing where they're like trying to be more powerful and that's like not cool. But
I don't know why I see it. Like if I have a daughter.
Yeah.
And believe me, I love my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And if she came home and told me her boss gave her a back rub that she didn't want,
yeah,
it would make me way more angry than if she told me, dude, Dad, I went up to hotel room with this guy at 2 in the morning and he asked if he could masturbate in front of me. Like, I would get that.
Right.
I would say, well, sweetheart, you know, it's 2 in the morning. Maybe you shouldn't be out drinking. You know, don't go up to a hotel room with a dude at 2 in the morning when you've been drinking because, you know, that's the kind of things that dudes do, you know? So, and even if she had to sit through the masturbation, it would not bother me as much as the manager who gave her back rub where she had to sit and take it because she was working for him.
Yeah, because that's like a power trip, you know? He's like power tripping over her.
By the
yeah.
way, no, I'm...
Because she's a hostage in the first situation.
Yeah, exactly.
The same situation, she's experiencing one of the less desirable aspects of life, but that's fucking life. You're not going to change human beings. That's programmed. Men are going to be trying, or women too, and alcohol and drugs. And you know?
I mean, you bring a woman up to a hotel room. I mean, even if it's like a business conversation and you see, you know, there's a bed in there, you're thinking about sex no matter what. That crosses your mind, even in the most professional setting.
Absolutely.
Possible.
I hate that's
just what happens. Even if you're just one-on-one with a woman, that's you know, like that crosses your mind.
What I hate to do an abrupt
go ahead, Dan,
gear
go
change ahead. Here, but Gary's got some interesting things going on. He just did Colbert, and he's also, you know, we talked last week. I don't know if you're into comedy at all, Ryan. But the Comedy Cellar has a pilot. You know what a pilot is?
Yeah.
In the showbiz context?
Yeah.
A pilot with Comedy Central to do a show that every week the comics talk about what's going on. The comics on stage do jokes about what's going on that week. It's kind of like Best Week Ever, but with stand-up. So that we're in the midst right now of filming a pilot, and Gary is tonight is going to participate pilot shooting of the pilot.
That's right. Looking forward to it.
Now,
it's
Gary,
be a little nervous, but it should go well.
But now, Gary, you were instructed, and just to let the audience know, they're taping all the comics tonight. I'm doing it tomorrow night, in fact. And you were instructed to talk about particular topics of the week, or just talk about what you want to talk about, or a little bit of both. Tell us about the process.
Yeah, so you're basically given a list of topics, and they kind of outlined it where, you know, you try and develop like some material towards these topics over like the previous like 4 days, which is when they like sent that email. So some of the topics would just be like, you know, the Golden Globes, which just happened, or you know, stuff about Trump and how he says that he has a bigger nuclear button than Kim Jong Un. Or, you know, some things about, like, one of my things that they gave me was about penis whitening that's going on in Bangkok, Thailand.
Penis whitening?
I don't know if that... What do you think about that?
I've never even heard of that.
Okay. Yeah, but anyway, that's supposed to be, you know, that's, like, another story.
What is penis whitening?
I guess just a bunch of guys in Bangkok, Thailand, like, there's a clinic that offers penis whitening that they just whiten your penis because it's, like, a fad that's going on. It's, like, very popular, and apparently... they think it's you know, just a
more prestigious to have a white penis.
Yeah, I guess more prestigious. When you would think it actually would be better, obviously, to have a black penis.
Well, stereotypes about penis size and race aside, you know, in Asia, very oftentimes the whiter the better in their culture. I believe that Japanese women with white porcelain skin are highly prized.
Okay. Well,
maybe I made that up. I don't know, but yeah.
I don't research it as much.
I've never heard of penis whitening. I've heard of asshole bleaching.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. His mom is here.
Well, this is the second time you said her.
So they gave you all these topics, and it's you know, it's definitely hard because you know, you're supposed to incorporate it in your stand-up act, but you still want to, you know, you still have your act, so you want it to, like, you know, maintain, you know, basically your voice.
Yes.
So
right.
To do that,
you're not a monologue joke type guy.
No.
You talk about your foibles.
Yeah, and I, you know, I mean, I'm a joke teller.
And foibles you have.
Yeah. I'm a joke teller. However, you know, incorporating like the you know, the current events where you could try and make it like, you know, you know, incorporate yourself into these situations. Definitely makes it a little difficult. And plus, you know, you're doing jokes that are fairly new. So, you know, some of these could bomb.
I think what they should do, I'm going to put on my producer hat if anybody's interested, in my opinion, is I think it might be productive to, say, have 3 nights where the audience is told, this is the This Week at the Comedy Cellar show. And the comedians are going to do some new stuff that they haven't done before, and it'll be a lot of topical stuff, and some of the comedians will talk about the same topic, so the audience kind of knows what's going on. And the comedians are more at ease because they know the audience knows. And maybe give us each a couple of nights so that if a joke doesn't work perfectly on Thursday, we could have it refined and ready to go by Friday or Saturday. So Noam is the executive, top executive emperor of this show.
I actually did think that we should give people a chance to do more than one set. I can't say I was vetoed. I just I went with the flow. But we do have an option for a pickup day to do another show if people want to reshoot some stuff if it doesn't go.
Well, again, this is just a pilot. Now, what was your name again? The mother of Fran? I'm not sure if this is a show business term, a pilot. What that means is they're taping a show.
I know what a pilot
well,
is.
They know what a fucking pilot is.
Not everybody. All right, because not everybody knows what a pilot is. My mother would not know what a pilot is. If I tell my mother we were shooting a pilot, she would think it was an aviation-related...
By the way, I want to apologize for the he or she. You know, first of all, you look just like somebody I know. Somebody in my family who happens to be a lesbian. But maybe they have transgender leanings. I don't know. But anyway, it occurs to me, and we had an issue with someone who worked here one time, that the he or she, it's not something you think about. It comes, it registers somewhere like a switch in the brain, and it is not something somebody thinks about before it comes out of their mouth.
Totally.
And you can't, you'd have to train them to, so whatever's like, you meet somebody and whatever, and it registers, that's a he or that's a she. And I think to change that is, it doesn't happen like that. It takes a little.
Well, I got the hang of it. I got it right away. I said I called you she by mistake before the show one time. Didn't happen a second time.
Right, but you're being careful.
I'm good.
But you could tell when someone's going out of their way to use the wrong pronoun to make you feel bad.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
And that, like, they're using a lot of effort to do that. Like, certain people in my extended family still do that 10 years later. And I could tell, like, it's been 10 years.
What do they do?
They say the wrong pronoun, or they say my birth name, which I won't say right now, but they...
They do it on purpose.
They do it so on purpose. I mean, they've been looking at me as Ryan, as male, for 10 years. Like, you could, like, get it by now, you know? Like, you've had enough time to look me in the face and hear everyone around you say he, like, you could get it by now.
It's all about the intent.
Well, Ray had something to say about the pilot. Fran, is it all right if Ray grabs your...
No, you can take it again.
Take Gary's mic. Ray just had it.
I apologize. Thank you.
This is Ray Allen.
I'm just going to...
Who I just found out last week was an executive producer on this fucking show.
Unbelievable.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, well, there's some controversy if you listen to the last episode.
Yeah, you know, I've been involved with this pilot since day one and kind of steered the ship. And
you were actually angry at me for mentioning it.
But mentioning what?
When we were at that meeting.
Now, ladies, gentlemen, everybody, what's interesting is that there's lots of great ideas in the world, and often they go nowhere. So we should all be grateful and happy that this great idea is being made into a television pilot on the premier comedy network, and I have great feeling about this show. Terrific feeling. And I'm going to walk around the corner now. We're going to go
shoot day
one. How many
other shows have you had great? Is this the first great feeling you've had in your career?
Can I tell you something? Every project.
I want the list of other great feelings.
Every project I've done, and you probably don't know this, everything has been a success. Latin Legends of Comedy that I self-produced and financed, sold to 20th Century Fox. DailyComedy.com outlasted NBC, TBS, and Budweiser's comedy websites. I co-founded that. LateNet was a big hit with AOL, did very well. So every project I've been involved with Noam has been a success.
All over America, no failures. People are saying, I feel for Noam right now.
No, this is not. Noam's great idea is going to end up being picked up by Comedy Central, and he will not give me a smidgen of credit, and that's okay, because I know that my colleagues know how hard I've worked on this. Now I'm going to go walk around the corner.
I will give you credit, and he does work hard on it.
Thank you.
He does.
And I'm going to go walk around the corner now. We're going to go shoot day one, and I'm very excited that Dan and Gary are going to be doing wonderful material.
Well,
I'm on tomorrow.
Gary's on tonight, and we certainly look forward to that.
Yes, and you have two, by the way, you have two terrific topics going on right now, back and forth. It's very interesting, and I'm sorry to interrupt you two lovely people.
It's okay, we're going to cut it out.
No, it's fine. Anyway, that's it. I'll see you guys a little later.
Well, let's try to bring the two together, if possible. This has never been tried before. We're going to try to bring together comedy and transgender in one show. Do you like Comedy Central? And will you be watching this week at the Comedy Cellar, Ryan?
Well, I'll watch it to support y'all.
Awesome.
But
I don't know if it's
a lot of comedy. It has to be so funny for me to laugh.
Oh, you won't like it.
Most comedy I hear at open mics, like, they're not
well,
funny at all.
Well, you're going open mics by definition. Yeah. We're not open mics.
This is the comedy. This is where all the most famous comedians
in
the world
are. Yeah, I'm sure it would be funny here, but in my hometown, it's
not
funny.
Well, forget about your hometown. What is your hometown? In Suffolk County.
I'm from Bayshore.
That's in Suffolk County.
No offense to all of them, but...
I mean, Suffolk County, anything goes out that way.
Yeah.
So, Mike Birbiglia introduced me to the concept of imposter syndrome this week. Do you guys know what imposter syndrome is?
No idea.
You know what it is, Steven? What happened to my phone? Imposter syndrome...
I never heard of it.
Can you explain it easily, or should I...
It's basically where, no matter how successful someone is, they always feel like a fraud.
Well, maybe that is what it is, imposter syndrome is a concept describing individuals who are marked by an inability to internalize their accomplishments and a persistent fear of being exposed as a fraud. Yeah, so I think I'm suffering that because I feel totally separated from all the great things that have been happening around here for a long time, And I don't know what to do about that. Like this TV show, and okay.
And that's also a comedian's mentality
but
too.
But Noam's not like a comedian.
You know, you could have a great set, and then you still feel like you did shit. You know, and I feel like that also probably carries over to you, because you're around it. So you've been around it so long that you know something. All this great stuff is happening, but you still feel like
I can tell, like what Gary knows. Like I used to have the wall, you know, and the wall was like really like. I'm a musician. I was really in charge of that. I rehearsed the band twice a week, and I arranged all the music, and I performed. And it went from empty to lines out the door, you know, 5, 6, 7 nights a week sometimes. And I didn't feel like an imposter then. Like, that was my... And I ran it for, like, 20 years. And then opened the pussy. I had other accomplishments where I didn't feel that way. But the Comedy Cellar,
yeah.
Despite all the growth that it's had, and I made a lot of decisions that... If I had made other decisions and people advocated other decisions, you know, the decisions to go the other way, I could see that we wouldn't have all the growth. In the end, the Comedy Cellar is about the comedians who write their material, and they are the product. And no matter what I do for a living, I always feel like, listen, I'm just putting the lights on, and it's them, you know? And I think that separates me, and that's why I'm having trouble really enjoying all this success. It's pretty troubling.
Well, you know, of course, there's great comedians at many, many clubs in the city, but this is a club that's obviously done the best. So you're doing something, right?
I know, yeah. But it's not. But I feel like what I'm doing. I feel like the other clubs are just the stuff they do wrong. Is so like, what are they thinking?
I know. I mean, I agree. You go into a club and you're like, why? I mean, Caroline's is Caroline's, but like. You know, they have that name of like, oh, they're so prestigious. But you go in there and the lights are so bright when you're on stage there. And you're like, you know, if you dim the lights, you'd have a better show. Just stuff like that.
Or handing out a check while somebody's on stage.
Exactly. Handing
like
out
why?
A check. I mean, there are a million things. And there are a million little things that could be corrected. However, these people don't listen. And you're around it. You see it. You kind of just understand what works. And I feel like, you know, as much as it is obviously the comics, it's just listening to other people and, you know, people being able to critique it and, you know, able to take criticism on top of that. Most people can't take criticism.
Yeah, well, like Dan. So then I had this idea about this show.
I also can't take compliments very well either.
I had this idea about this show, which would be like a topical, and it was a good idea. We tape all like, 30 shows for the week, and then we edit all week and take all the comedians' material on topical stuff that's going on that week because it's kind of like a Twitter kind of thing, and the comedians will be into it and they make money. And it was a good idea. I mean, everybody jumped at it right away. And then Comedy Central gives us this big budget for a pilot and everything like that. So you'd think I would have that pleasure, like, you know, it really was my idea. No, I'm like, whatever, you know, I can't. I'm having a real. I didn't want to come to work today.
Look,
what the fuck is the matter with me?
Happiness is hard to come by, and it may be that your imposter syndrome. It may well be there's no cure for it. It might be like high blood pressure. We can manage it as best we can, but you're just gonna have to live with it, with your imposter syndrome.
I don't know. It's a big problem for me now. Anyway,
but many 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 great men, I assume, are of a similar mind.
Donald Trump has imposter syndrome?
But
no,
if you
he's
didn't
got
show
the,
up,
he's got the opposite.
It wouldn't go on.
He's got the opposite of imposter syndrome. He thinks that everything he did is genius.
He is an imposter.
but we
think he is an imposter.
Or maybe that's not what I mean. Maybe that's what he thinks. You know, to the public, but it says to the public, but behind closed doors, he's like, you know, I got to do more. How do I be more famous, even than, you know, than I already am? So maybe he's still, you know, there's still like some type of.
But you could be suffering from clinical depression, though.
No, I'm not depressed.
Oh, okay.
I'm not depressed. When I sit home with my kids, I'm the happy as can be. I just don't want to leave.
Well, I think also after a certain age, the excitement, you know, you got this young Reiner, he's 24 years old, and, you know, he sees the world very differently than somebody in their 40s and 50s. It's all very exciting for him, his musical career.
We're going to cut. Can we play a little bit of your song on the show?
Sure.
The producer
Thank
will
you.
cut in the song.
But I just don't think after a certain age, you're not going to have the same excitement that you would have had at 30 or 40 when you owned the Wah. I think it's natural.
Maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
I mean, I remember when I was 29 auditioning. Oh, boy. I'd go to CBS to go on an audition. And I don't know, Gary, you're a bit younger than me, but if you're still when you go on an audition, my first time auditioning, it was like, oh, my God, I'm in show business.
Oh, completely.
I'm auditioning at CBS, and my agent, I'd call my sister, my agent sent me on an audition. That's right.
Yeah.
My agent.
Oh, totally. I mean,
I'd be on that subway reading those lines. I was hoping everybody's looking at me like, ooh, there goes
the
actor.
Oh, you got a guitar? Is this,
but that's all gone now. Okay. Now that my agent calls me up, I'm like, what do you want?
Yeah.
But in any case, oh, we got some guitars here. So I think it's a natural diminution of enthusiasm with age. But
do you know any song I might know?
I don't know.
Like a Beatles song or a...
I hope Brian is... string.
Yeah, I know.
I hope Brian is good or this could be awkward.
he can't play a guitar missing a string.
He's missing a string, for God's sakes. No, I'm giving you a guitar. Huh?
I want to play. Do you know a song? If you don't know a song, I'll just give you the guitar. Do you know a song I might know?
Probably not. I don't know many cover songs. Because I have to remember all my own songs, so it's
The Wait.
What?
The Wait, that's a great song.
Wait.
The Wait.
But I sing everything in a different key than everything.
Well, I'll play whatever key, whatever key you want.
Oh.
What key?
I think C. I think so.
You want to do it with me, or you want to play it?
I'll try.
Okay.
All right, here we go, baby. This is the Nat, the
Can
Wait.
Can you cut this out?
What's that? I won't be perfectly in tone. Okay. Roll it into that. Go ahead.
Yeah.
You go. You start.
Well, I'll give you a 1, 2, 3. And one.
You start. I need the key. Pulled into Nazareth. I was feeling about 10:30. Just need some place where I can lay my head. Hey, mister, can you tell me where a man might find a bed? Just grinned, shook my hand, knows all he said. Take a load off Fanny, take a load for free. Take a load off Fanny, and you put the load right on me.
Yay! Want another verse?
What's the next
up
verse?
To you?
2, 3.
What's the next verse?
I don't know. I'll do the chorus one more time.
Take a load off Fanny. Take a load for free. Take a load off Fanny. And you put the load right on me.
All right, you saved it, Calabria. You saved it. You saved it. That was pretty good.
Well, can Ryan come? You know, every Friday night here. Where do you live now? You live
in
LA.
I live in Los Angeles.
Oh, well, tuning in now.
How long are you in town for?
Till the 19th.
Good singer.
Yeah, very good.
Well, you
good.
Know, every Friday night, Noam and his and the musicians sing up here
cool.
at the Olive Tree Cafe. I don't know if I'm talking at a turn, if he would stop by and sing a song.
Yeah, of course you can come. He can come to sing a song. And Dan always does that. I've never heard him, like, pause and think about what to say. And he was always like, just say it. I'm not saying the wrong thing, am I?
No.
I remember one time, the older, I was here, I think it was Dana Perino, you know, President Bush's ex-press secretary.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting, I'm having dinner with her at the front of the restaurant there. And Dan walks up to me, he goes, Noam, you got to tell these cooks to wash their hands when they use the bathroom. I'm not speaking out of turn, am I?
Well,
that's perfect.
That is actually true.
I have a better
true.
One than that. I invited a girl down, and we were hanging out.
No.
Actually,
get
true.
Get that fucking mic out of Calabria's hand.
Because
now it's
going
to become
down.
Let's all dump on Natterman.
And we were hanging out, and I went to the bathroom, and Natterman walks up to the girl, and he goes, oh, so you're one of Calabria's girls, huh?
No, wrong. Never happened. Never happened. Ooh, she told you that happened?
She told me.
Yeah, well, she's wrong, because that never happened. I never did that. That's number one. Number two, this is not gang up on Natterman hour, because we could easily gang up on you or you know,
poor Ryan
or poor Ryan.
Anyway,
that's not accurate. I don't believe so. No, I never did that.
Anyway, we're gonna wrap it up. I want to say Ryan.
We'll wrap it up. We got time, my brother. It's only 7:50.
55 minutes, and we're going to cut in Ryan's song.
Well, we want to maybe briefly touch upon Gary's recent.
Colbert.
Do you watch the Colbert show? Ryan didn't sound to me like he's plugged into the comedy.
It takes me about 10 minutes to turn my television on because I cannot figure out how to turn it on. I had the guy come to fix my TV. It was just unplugged.
Oh, yeah, good old Ryan. So, well, you know, that's a feminine stereotype, yeah, right? <it's> So the unicorn's a man.
I didn't grow up with it. My brother was hogging it.
Right. Well, Gary was on Colbert Report. For whatever reason, that's our dear friend Jessica Pilot books that, I believe. And
I'll email you the link.
Was it scary?
It wasn't, you know, the fact that it was in the Ed Sullivan studio, you know, if you think about all that stuff, you know, it could get a little frightening. The fact that, you know, it's like, it's not that you do a TV appearance, you know, every day. So it's, just the fact of going through that. But, you know, I knew the material. So going in, I was just like, you know, go in and just do your thing. And that kind of calmed my nerves.
Your material's perfect for TV. I didn't see the set yet, but
thanks.
I haven't seen the set.
You know, like I always felt I've had past experiences of doing it. So like that kind of carries over of just like, all right, I've done this before. And you just kind of just, you know, barrel through it. And, you know, you're going to say your jokes. And
wait, did you do Letterman in that theater?
I didn't do Letterman, but AGT and Conan.
In that theater?
No, not in that theater. AGT was in Radio City, yeah. Music Hall, so...
I know, well, yeah. Yeah, that, come to think of it, I did AGT.
Yeah.
But,
But, you know, so the experience wasn't, you know, you're not, like, scared, but you want it to go well.
Of
course. You don't want it to be like, all right, this is the time I screwed it up.
Well, who are the other guests? Because that, to me, whenever I do a late-night talk show, to me, it's like, I'm more interested in the opportunity to meet somebody cool.
So... this time around, they actually did something different. They taped a few stand-ups and had a musical guest on top of that with Colbert going in the beginning. Like, so it wasn't like the A-list guest that was there that day, and then they just edited you into an episode.
Oh, that sucks. Fucking sucks. It was,
yes,
cock.
That was the first time that they did that for Colbert.
I did that with Ferguson, but I knew ahead of time that's what it was.
Yeah.
Where Ferguson leaves the room, and then you come in, and then they edit it in.
It changes the experience.
You don't feel like you're part of the show.
Sure. Yeah, so you're not part of the show. However... and I found out about doing the show totally, like, all together, like, 2 days right before. So I was, you know, I'm like, oh, great. And then, you know, Jessica mentioned about, like, you know, that it's going to be a little bit different. I'm like, you know, whatever. You know, the main thing is, like, you want the credit. You want to have the good set. So that's the most important thing. The other stuff is just, like, kind of...
But that stuff matters.
It does
matter.
Well, you also want to feel like you're part of the show, not like, all right, we'll let you in later because we don't really consider you a real guest.
Totally. I think that's more of like, you know, just something that they were able to get me on the first week of January. So I was the first late night guest that they had on. And while all the other shows were on like repeat. So it was nice to have that done. Meanwhile, a lot of people get bumped. So, you know, I'm just happy for the experience. But however... yes, it would have been much cooler if I could have met 50 Cent, who was on the episode
met,
that I
was I did a Conan episode.
That's how he feels.
An episode of Conan years ago. It was about 10 years ago where Mr. Cent was on the show with me. And so I wanted to meet 50, and I go into a room, and it's like a bunch of black people in the room, and I'm like, which one's 50?
Did you get in trouble?
No, I didn't say that out loud, but I didn't know which one Fitty was.
Right.
And then Fitty said, hey. And I said, hey. You know, and then I met Fitty. But to be honest with you, I'm not a rap fan, obviously, so meeting Fitty wasn't the highlight of my life. But Jennifer Aniston was also on that show, and I met her briefly, and that was interesting. And it's fun, like, the first time I did Conan, I believe it was Reese Witherspoon and Ray Romano were on that show, and I got to go and sit on the couch next to Reese, and she's watched me. She was on the couch watching as I performed, and then I sat down, and she said, "Oh, that was great," you know, and
yeah.
I just felt like, "Oh, I'm part of the show. I'm really in show business." And then Conan talks to you and says, "Oh, thanks for coming, whatever," you know,
oh,
and
sort
you
of.
Wave to the audience on the couch with Reese Witherspoon. So,
just telling you what you missed.
Oh yeah.
Well, no, you've done other talk shows.
Oh yeah. Well, I did Conan, and that was same thing where
well,
it's
who
like.
Was on
who
that
your guest?
I mean, Kate McKinnon, is that her
McKinnon.
Name?
McKinnon.
From SNL. Yeah.
And then another. I forget the other guy's name who was like the first guest, but he's not doing anything right now. He was in like Expendables.
So Dan had better guests.
Yeah, Dan had better guests.
Well, I've done a lot of these shows, and
Kate's
I've had some
big now, but I mean, it's just you know.
I've had
I know
some
so
good
people,
ones.
Rutger Hauer.
Who?
Rutger Hauer?
No, that wasn't.
Is it in the Expendables?
I don't know. It was
Jean-Claude Van Damme?
No, it was like a younger guy who, I don't know.
I've had like Broadway people on, and then you're really disappointed. Like, oh, some guy from some Broadway show you've never heard of.
But being on the show with the guests, being like, all right, this is a show. There's something about that obviously makes it, you know, more special. But at the end of the day, you know, you just want the credit. You want to get on TV and then on to the next thing. Anyway.
But this way, when you go down to Aruba for Aruba Ray show, they can put on the flyer from the Colbert show.
We have to wrap it up. I want to tell Ryan that is a pleasure to meet you.
And, thank you.
And a very nice young man.
And thank I really believe in your message very strongly, and I think it could change a lot of hearts and minds if you can get it out there.
What about Jazz Jennings? Any thoughts?
Yeah, I've met Jazz, and she's really nice and everything. I think, like, she was kind of, like, pushed into being famous too young, maybe, so that, like, that's all she knows. So I feel like, I don't know, it's the same thing, like, that happens to a lot of, like, young celebrities. Like, they don't really get to live a normal life.
I don't think Noam knows who Jazz Jennings is, because Noam's kind of old and out of it. But us young folks know who she is. She is a
transgender
activist. She had a show on the Learning Channel, I believe it was, called...
I am Jazz.
I am Jazz, and she's a transgender activist. So, in any case, well, I guess that's it for the show.
Christine Jorgensen, by the way, I put the two together. The tennis player, what's her name? Renee Richards.
Renee Richards.
Christine Jorgensen grew up in the Bronx and was admitted into the army and was like the first famous. So, by the way, what do you think about? You have to go. What do you think about like sports teams? Like, do you think that a born male who now identifies as a female should be able to compete against born females in like track events or weightlifting or whatever it is?
I think they should test the hormones and see if they're at like a similar level than all the other athletes. And if they are, I think it's fair. Yeah.
Does that science hold up? I don't know. That's interesting. So in other words, if it can be equalized, then you're okay with it.
Yeah, but I think that's what the Olympics does. They test the hormone levels. Yeah.
Is that real? Like, if we were without testosterone, would we be as weak and as women? It's all about the hormones?
It's not all about the hormones.
I'm wondering, like,
I'm
this
guy's like been living in L.A. a while, because like you hear it in his voice, like, it's not about the hormones. I mean, he kind of has an L.A. kind of rhythm to his voice, I find.
Like,
anyway.
I'm a really small guy, and I'm not, in my whole life, I always joke, like, I can beat any woman in an arm wrestle. Like, it's so... even
You can if she works out a lot.
Even if she works out.
I doubt it.
I'm telling you, I have never lost. It. Now, I'm a pretty good arm wrestler. And I'm sure somewhere there is a woman... I'm sure somewhere there's a woman who can beat me, of course.
Judy Gold?
No, but I don't know. That's
percentage
not nice.
Wise, you can win.
But my point being that just that there's a tremendous natural advantage that the average man has over the average woman in terms of strength. And I'm wondering if that's only to do with hormones... or is actually there's something else to it? Is it something also chromosomally? I don't know.
Lou, cut out the Judy Gold.
No, you said it.
Well,
okay.
But you know, you have asked to be cut out too sometimes.
I was
but
just
anyway, what else do we have to
say
ask
goodnight,
this young
Dan.
Man? All right, back to LA with you, I guess.
I have a question actually for the comedians, mostly for you.
Sure.
What about me?
I am curious. Oh, okay, you too. I'm. Well, he's
ask
the
Gary,
guest.
Ask Gary. Good.
Okay, I'm really curious to know
good point.
Many hours a day or a week or a month you have to spend researching and watching TV and the news and to get all this knowledge. Because, I mean, I would not be able to be a comedian because I'm not, like, in touch with everything happening, you know?
You can't turn on your TV.
And you have to...
Yes.
You need a lot of knowledge and... awareness of what's happening in the world to be a comedian. Is that true? And
how often
do you have to do this research?
Well, it's more so that you have to get up on stage. So,
mm-hmm.
like, more times you get up on stage and, like, you know, you're going to kind of find jokes on stage sometimes. So, but obviously you're going to go on stage a little bit with topics and, you know, Dan could clarify this too, but, like, you want to live life. A lot of my jokes are more about, like, life and, like, things that I might experience because, you know, if you're taking things out of the news, another comic might actually have, you know, the same premise the same twist as you and punchline. But so I kind of take things that I might have experienced myself And then just, you know, write about that and then take it to the stage. But as far as hours go, you're kind of just, the more times you get on stage, the better and more more refined your jokes are going to be.
Well, even though he didn't ask me, I will answer anyway, that I concur with Mr. Viter, at least with to answer your question, zero is the amount of time I spend researching my jokes because my jokes are about me. Mm. And I don't need to do a lot of research to know that, you know, I didn't get laid in high school. In any case, it's about my life, mostly. Or about things that are very... I don't do specific shit. Now, this Comedy Central pilot...
It's a different beast.
...is a different beast, and we are doing, because that's
so
the nature of the beast.
Research.
This is the book my grandmother had. Yeah. I just thought, that's the book.
But it's not that much reason. We're not doing... They're sending us topics. And we're not doing stuff that's very hard to... You know, it's stuff that everybody knows about, you know? Like... Yeah, big stuff that's in the news. Like, for example, Prince Harry. Prince Harry, everybody, is marrying a half-black woman. I don't know if you knew that. You didn't know that?
No, I don't even know what Prince Harry looks like.
Oh, for the love of God, man. I tell you, these young kids today, you know, they have no respect for the monarchy.
Okay, can we sign
off? I guess we'll go on that note. Thank you, our
well,
dear...
I have to... There's a pilot going on.
All right, right. Our dear friend Ryan Cassata and his mother Fran Cassata, or do you have another name?
My last name is Love.
Love?
Fran Love. I love that name, baby. It's 1967. Summer of Love.
Like Courtney Love.
It's a wonderful name. So you're only half Italian, I guess. Anyway. Yes, thank you for coming. Gary Viter.
Viter.
Whatever.
Hey, it's a pronoun. No, I don't know.
All right, everybody. Bye-bye.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.